Our third case for this morning is Meade against Moraine Valley Community College, and we'll hear first from Mr. Giampietro.
Morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Wayne Giampietro. I'm the attorney for Robin Meade. Ms. Meade was an adjunct faculty member of Moraine Valley Junior College. Moraine Valley asked her, and she was also president of the adjunct faculty union at the college. Moraine Valley asked her to write a letter to an organization known as the League for Innovation in the Community College, supporting Moraine Valley as a member of the board of that organization. Ms. Meade did write the letter, but she said something different than what the college expected or wanted her to say. Speaking as the president of the union, she said that this college should not be a member of the board of this organization, which the goal of which is to improve situations within community colleges, because this college treats its adjunct faculty poorly.
So let me zero in on the contract. She has an employment agreement. You've got it at A11 of your appendix. It seems to start August the 19th and end December the 20th of that fall, right?
That's the first semester.
Right, it's the first semester. And under the language employment agreement, it says, duly established and published board policies expressly made a part of this agreement by reference. And so what I need to feel satisfied about to do anything in this case is to see this as something other than something that fills out the details of employment at will. If she actually had an agreement for this period of time, then maybe you can get to first base on a property interest.
The contract itself sets forth the courses she's to teach that semester.
It does set forth the courses. It sets forth the money she's supposed to earn. But then if you go back to things like the collective bargaining agreement and board policy, don't they have language saying that there's no interest in continued employment?
Well, the board policy does not say that. The collective bargaining agreement says that adjunct faculties are at-will employees. But that collective bargaining agreement is not a part of this contract.
So this is just a supplemental or a separate employment agreement?
This is a separate employment agreement. They wouldn't have to give her any kind of an employment agreement if they didn't want to, but they chose to do that. And they said to her, at least for the first semester, you have this job, you will be teaching these courses, you will be getting this compensation.
And you would concede then that she doesn't have any interest, as this agreement says, in any future assignment, not for the spring semester or any other time?
Correct. But at least for the first semester, she's got a job at specific rates of pay for to do specific duties. And that's clearly a property interest that's protected by due process. And clearly, she wasn't given due process when they took it away from her. That's right.
I guess I'm having a little trouble understanding why the collective bargaining agreement statement that bargaining unit employees acknowledge they are employees at will isn't incorporated into her agreement.
The agreement doesn't say anything about it. Nor does the collective bargaining agreement refer to contracts such as this. This is a separate additional employment agreement that the college gave to her above and beyond whatever the collective bargaining agreement says. They didn't have to do this, but they did.
Okay, and that argument was made to the district court.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely. And that's the basis of the due process claim. Obviously, the First Amendment retaliation claim, I don't think there's really any question about this. I mean, the district court says that the issues that she's talking about to this league are not matters of public interest and importance. I can't conceive of many other things that are much more of interest and public importance than the education of our children, the way faculty members at the upper level of education are treated and the fact...
So let me, I mean, yes. Let me ask how important you think it is that she was the union president.
Well, it's extremely important because this court has held on several occasions that when an individual is speaking as a union representative, they're speaking as a private individual, not just in their own capacity as an employee. So clearly, there's no question that she's speaking as a member of the public.
That takes care of the Garcetti, potential Garcetti problem, which isn't really an issue here.
Well, it also takes care of the other problem that she's just talking about her own private employment situation. So I think it takes care of both of those, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I mean, I don't know how far you advance the argument by just saying education is important, but in fact, there's actually a pretty extensive public debate going on in higher education circles these days about the expanded use and potential mistreatment of adjunct faculty, part-time faculty members.
There is indeed, and this is a part of that debate I would submit, Your Honor. I mean, she says in the letter 60% of the courses at this school are being taught by adjunct faculty, not by full-time faculty. And she also says that they've changed the way adjunct faculty are being treated so that now they're not being paid by the hour, so they can't even tutor their students because they're not paid to do that anymore. And this is right in the middle of that debate, which is going on throughout this country right now, as Your Honor correctly says. So this is clearly about a matter of public interest and importance. Clearly she's speaking as a private person on behalf of the union. And in fact, the letter that was given to her firing her acknowledges that she's speaking on behalf of the union, but the writer says, well, I just don't like your arguments. It goes beyond what a union can properly say. And you're just really making personal attacks at the university. Doesn't say a word about her speaking about her own job position. So the very document that dismisses Ms. Mead from her employment recognizes that she was not speaking about issues having to do with her employment situation. There is no exception to the First Amendment protection afforded Ms. Mead in this situation. Unless the court has questions, I really have nothing further to say.
We will allow you to save whatever you wish for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Murphy?
May it please the court and opposing counsel, John Murphy for the college. Good morning. If I can follow up first in the order that the court took the two arguments on the due process issue, I think if we look at the employment agreement, it is, I think as Judge Wood indicated, more in the nature of a term sheet. Here's your assignment for the first semester. Here are your courses.
Except that at the bottom it says, in so many words, employment agreement. So that's the reason for thinking it's an employment agreement.
Yes.
It's on page A11, all capital letters, and this little paragraph, very brief, but it incorporates by reference whatever duly established and published board policy is, but it interestingly does not in any way attempt to integrate this with the collective bargaining agreement. So, I mean, the natural way to look at this is she's got a job from August the 19th to December the 20th, no more. You don't have to renew. You don't have to ever look at her again, but she's got that job, and you need to have some reason to take it away from her other than you don't like a letter she wrote to an organization.
Nor does it say, Your Honor, that during the term of the agreement, the employee may be dismissed only for cause.
No, but it's well established in employment contract law that if you've got a contract for a specific term, it's not at will anymore. The whole premise of at-will employment is that's the default rule when the parties have not agreed to a specific term.
I believe the cases, Illinois cases, disagree with that, Your Honor. The Moments case with the Seventh Circuit discussed that. The Red case, R-E-D-D, versus Nolan, in which we cite in our brief, involved an agreement where the employee, I think it was a Cook County sheriff, said, this is a probationary period, but you may only be dismissed for cause. The court read that in pari materia, but there was an underlying statute.
That's an entirely different kind of issue. When people agree to hire for a specific term, the assumption is it's not at will. If you want some case law, I can give it to you. But let's see, what do we have? I'm drawing on some good work by Judge Dow in one of his opinions. Under Illinois law, employment relationships without a fixed duration are presumed to be terminable at the will of either party. The mere existence of an employment contract does not rebut the presumption of at-will employment unless it establishes a specified duration. I'm reading from Schwartz, 659 F.S. 2nd at 993. Is that wrong?
I'm not disputing that, but then, Your Honor, the...
Then she's got something better than at will for 4 months.
Unless, Your Honor.
And nobody said that this class wasn't needed. That was the one carve-out that the college gave. If they decide, you know, maybe two students sign up for it and they decide they're not going to offer that course, they have reserved the right for that. But that's actually further indicating that there is, in fact, a right.
However, Your Honor, the collective bargaining agreement, which Your Honor mentioned, specifically says the college reserves the right to terminate adjunct faculty member during the academic
term.
But
what you have not done is shown how that knits together with the employment agreement. The employment agreement is a more specific agreement as to her. So the very best one could do for you is to say, well, we have to figure out then, does the CBA supersede the employment agreement? Is it irrelevant? Is it subject to? Is this something extra that she got? I mean, it's very unclear.
The underlying language underneath the employment agreement references policies. The collective bargaining agreement precedes.
Would it violate the collective bargaining agreement if the employment agreement with her specified you can only be fired for cause within the next 6 months?
Yes, Your Honor. The collective bargaining agreement specifically says bargaining unit employees do not have a property interest in continued employment.
Does the collective bargaining agreement prohibit individual deals?
By its very nature, Your Honor.
Explicitly. I mean, if it were under federal labor law, there would be a big problem with this. But this is governed by state law, I assume.
Illinois labor law is similar, Your Honor. We have an exclusive bargaining relationship with that union. So anything dealing with the terms, conditions, and employment of bargaining unit members must be collectively bargained. So we can't make, just as we can't...
So if you can't make a side deal, what's this document doing?
It is in the nature of a term sheet that tells this employee, what are you teaching, what are you going to get paid, and it's subject to everything that's listed in the bottom.
And so it's fictional. Mm.
The agreement,
I mean, as an employment agreement.
It doesn't actually mean anything.
It's illegal or it's fictional. Is that the alternative?
It is subject to other documents, one of which is a collective bargaining agreement.
Really an agreement. It doesn't have any teeth at all. It's just musing.
It's the work rules, right?
Pardon me, Your Honor?
It's the work rules. It's telling the worker what you have to do.
You're starting a class. You're going to teach these hours, this class,
and
this is what we're going to pay.
Let me go on to your retaliation, to the retaliation claim, because I have to say, regardless of all this other stuff, the First Amendment stands as something that people can't be retaliated. The state, in the form of now this community college, can't retaliate against people for exercising First Amendment rights. And the district court seemed to think that the letter that she wrote was not something that was discussing a matter of public concern and that it was purely private, but there's not a private word in the letter. And as Judge Hamilton mentioned a minute ago, there's a vigorous debate out there about the use of adjunct faculty to teach in various colleges and universities. I find it very hard to swallow that.
A week ago Friday, I think this court decided a case called Olensky versus Rossi. And at the end of that opinion, this involved a union representative at a prison. And at the end of the opinion, this court spoke that matters, complaints regarding collective bargaining agreements, work conditions, and labor decisions are nothing more than employee grievances.
But in that context, now this is a letter she writes to an organization of community colleges discussing whether Moraine Valley should take a leadership position in that. This context is totally different. There are articles in major newspapers in this country. The Chronicle of Higher Education has been following the use of adjuncts. It's a structural issue for the way collegiate level teaching is supposed to happen. I don't think this prison case is at all the same.
The
point doesn't carve out everything having to do with employment from the matters of public concern.
This court and the Supreme Court have said that while a matter may be generally something that the public might be interested in, if the specific complaints relate to the terms and conditions of their employment.
But this doesn't. No, not a word in this letter does.
That can't be right. The same letter could refer to both, right?
Right.
Refer to your personal condition and say you're mistreating me because you have this terrible practice that other colleges have of exploitation of these helpless adjuncts.
It depends on what's said in the letter. Now, obviously, if somebody raised a matter of concern that goes beyond wages, hours, terms and conditions of employment.
The quality of education that students receive. How about that?
Well, that is a general topic of public concern. However, Your Honor, the specific issues that are raised in this letter.
And her letter touches on that. Exactly. She talks about not enough time to tutor.
But each of the predominant concerns are we aren't getting paid enough, our insurance benefits aren't the same as the full-timers,
it's at least a mixed letter, as Judge Posner was saying.
If it is a mixed letter, then...
Why does predominance matter? I don't understand that. All that should matter is this communications on a matter in which there is some public interest, some public debate? Who cares about motive or what other things this person is concerned with?
Well, I believe the cases say that you look at the specific...
Well, how about a reason? We don't usually care about the motive of speakers, right? When a politician gives a speech, his motive probably is to get reelected or get a better job or something, right?
Correct.
He probably is just reading something that some staffer gave him, right? We don't go beyond that, right?
Correct.
We say this is political speech, it's protected. We don't care about the motives, what this person cares about, right?
That's correct.
Well, why doesn't that apply to this? This letter deals with, as you know, the judges have been saying, a matter of really substantial public concern and interest. The way in which these universities are exploiting part-timers and how it hurts, not only hurts them, it hurts the students, right?
That is correct.
So what more do you need?
Because the specifics of the letter relate only to these employees' individual workplace conditions.
But they don't. I mean, A, so what, in a way? But B, that's actually not the case. She's, you know, talking about last spring during Earth Week, the administration reported Moraine provides sustainability, living wage for these people, and they don't make a living wage. The college's adjuncts are no longer being allowed to teach and work hourly, so math instructors can't tutor their own students. How will this affect student success? Developmental classes already experience a high failure rate, making it difficult for students to achieve completion in an area of study. It's a public issue.
But the manner in which it's phrased, goes back to
Why
do we care how it's phrased? I don't get it.
Well, because the content is the controlling factor in these cases, or the most dominant one.
What are you talking about? Why do you care about how it's phrased?
Well, she's not saying I should get a raise. She's not saying $8,000 isn't enough. It ought to be $16,000. She's raising an issue about this college's policies and whether it should have a leadership role in this League for Innovation in the Community College. That's what the letter is, where I'm sitting here looking at it. I'm sure you've read it many times.
Yes, Your Honor. And as we view the letter, each and every one of the complaints relates to this collective bargaining unit's specific workplace gripes in relation to the full-time faculty member.
So your view is that, let's see, for example, when Mr. Pickering was complaining about spending priorities some 40 years ago or so, that was personal?
No, Your Honor, that was an individual speaking as a citizen.
That's what he
said.
Concerned about
his personal taxes and treatment. Here, these are...
And how the money would be used to further a good, sound education policy, right?
That's correct.
Okay. But she's complaining about the spending priorities of the Moraine Valley administration. How is it different?
And how they affect their particular workplace conditions, which
and
is
students.
An employee.
And the quality of education
yeah.
furnished.
I mean, you're trying to split hairs here between things that are, you know, it's all part of the same public policy, right?
I disagree with that, Your Honor, because...
You don't see a connection between employment conditions for faculty and the quality of education provided?
Not in the context of this letter, because this letter only...
When would you? If it's not this letter, what would she have had to do to meet your test?
Well, a letter stating, generally speaking, that adjuncts are not protected adjuncts should be considered for more benefits. But this is, we don't get as much as the faculty. The college should spend more money on us. We should get health insurance. Those are... If an individual wrote that letter, that would be a workplace concern. I'm not making enough money in relation to full-timers. I don't get health insurance. And in our view,
if it's individual, I think you've got a point.
Now,
but this is collective, and it's addressed to the broader policies.
And she writes as the president of the union, President MVAFO.
Judge Hamilton, I think that points to an essential issue in this case where I believe... my view may part company with yours, but I think we should at least consider it. In the view of the college, if I can take it a wild example, if I am the president of the union and write to the League for Innovation saying this college is being unjust because the full-time faculty members get the A lot and we get the remote lot, and as a result we've got to walk 8 minutes to class. If I wrote that letter as an individual, regardless of who I wrote it to, the League for Innovation, Chicago Tribune, I don't think any reasonable court would view that as a matter of public concern because it relates to...
Parking privileges, yeah.
It relates to...
I won't disagree with you about that.
I don't believe that changes if I write that same letter on behalf of people I represent because the subject matter is not a matter of general public interest.
What if you say we don't have enough time to educate our students properly?
Well.
Which is what this letter says.
Well, that relates to the something Judge Posner mentioned about do we parse the letter out, which of course is what the Supreme Court did in Connick. If you'll recall, which Connick was the questionnaire where the plaintiff sent the letter or sent the questionnaire to everybody in the office, and the Supreme Court said that with the exception of the question about political favoritism, these are all complaints regarding workplace conditions. So in the view of the college, all of the specifics relating to this group indicate that we don't get paid enough in relation to the faculty members. We don't have health insurance, and the full-timers get class choices before
is
we
this
do
a,
those
things. This is a public school, isn't it?
It is a public community college, Your Honor.
Pardon?
Yes, public.
I would think anything that went on in a public school would be a matter of public concern. How could it not be?
Well, I don't believe the case is...
Well, it doesn't make any sense. This college is owned by the Moraine Valley, whatever that is. And, of course, the people who live there would be very interested in what was going on in the college. And they would be interested if they thought the adjuncts aren't being paid enough to educate the kids, right?
Or they're paying a huge tuition for their children, and it turns out that the college is just educating them with a bunch of adjuncts that don't cost very much money. Anyway, I think we have your point, so we need to move on. But thank you. Anything further, Mr. Giampietro?
Very briefly, as to the last point, Connick versus Myers said, we hold only that when a public employee speaks not as a citizen upon matters of public concern, but instead as an employee upon matters only of personal interest, absent the most unusual circumstances, that's not protected speech. Last term, in Lane versus Franks, the Supreme Court said, government employees are in the best position to know what ails the agencies for which they work and are entitled to speak about those matters. That's definitive, Judge. The only other point I would talk about is there is absolutely nothing in the collective bargaining agreement between the adjunct faculty and this university that says you cannot give an individual adjunct faculty member a specific employment agreement. The argument that the collective bargaining agreement obviates this specific employment agreement is fictitious. It's just not true. Nothing there. It's not cited by them, and they can't point to anything in the collective bargaining agreement because it's not the case. Unless there are other questions.
No further questions. Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.